This is power.
You're listening to Power in Heels.
She is the co-CEO of Women of Influence, an organization that empowers women to advance today while changing the narrative to create a more inclusive tomorrow. We are so excited to sit down and chat with the inspiring Stefania Varelli all about her career and work with Women of Influence.
I guess we can start off by talking a little bit about leaving all at the peak to chase a dream, and kind of more specifically how you got involved with Sweet Spot and what your biggest lesson that you learned with them was.
So I started my career in advertising. I think I figured out pretty early on it wasn't what I wanted to do. I still stuck with it for about 2.5 years. It was still going very well. And that's actually how I met Joanna Track. So for a period of time, we both worked at Ogilvy, and she left to start Sweet Spot. And so I sort of was friends with her, sort of knew the journey, was following along. One day we literally had like gone out for a coffee, and I made some sort of offhand comment saying, I want to get out of advertising, but I just don't see myself quitting, except maybe to come work for you. Like, I literally just like threw it out there into the universe. And not long after, she said, okay, well, maybe we can actually make this happen. Now, at the time, Sweet Spot was an email list to like a few thousand people in Toronto, which is not, you know, that's just it was the tiny seed of Sweet Spot. And she couldn't afford to outright hire me, but she said, would you be willing to come on, exchange your time for some equity in the company? Even though everyone thought I was insane, because I was like the managing director of Ogilvy when I actually put in my resignation, like swore at me and was like, how could you possibly do this? Like, don't you understand where you're going? And like the fact was I did. I could clearly see my life in advertising, and it was like lonely and sad and long hours and just not what I wanted to be doing. I had no idea if it would work out. I had no idea even if like the business would take off, but I'm a big believer in you will regret more the things you do not do than regret the things that you do and possibly fail at. I joined as the first employee right around the 1 year mark. It was me and Joanna in the back room of her house that didn't have great air conditioning. And yeah, we just sort of started building, and I called myself, I mean, you know, it was the number two. So it was sort of Joanna, and then everything Joanna didn't have time to do or wasn't great at was what I did. And we just how we sort of divided the work. And it was in this amazing journey, and being able to be a part of building a business, creating a brand, creating a voice to me was just so powerful. And I really did learn a lot about managing a business and a team. And Joanna is amazing. She is a great builder of teams. And so I got to sort of see how she did it. And then, you know, now I apply, I think, a lot of those lessons in what I do now with Women of Influence.
Mm-hmm. Of course. I mean, that's a crazy journey, kind of leaving what would be considered a stable job to just go work for someone basically for free. I know that you were working, you know, in equity, but like,
yeah,
that sounds so terrifying. And I totally understand your former boss being like, you're insane.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
But of course, you and Joanna, like, you made a really good team, and you said you're friends before that. And our listeners might not know, but Joanna is actually someone that we've previously had on the show before. Is there any big lessons that you learned?
Yeah, I mean, there was so definitely a lot of long hours and a lot of hard work. It's just in my nature to work a lot. It's just who I am. I think the big lessons that I learned from Sweet Spot is that there's hard work, but there's also smart work. You know, you have to be in charge of your schedule, and you have to start to recognize too. Sweet Spot was the first time that I had such a big team. Mm-hmm. And had to learn that even if you can do it, that you shouldn't necessarily be the one that does it. And you have to really put faith in your team to try, fail, learn, grow, because you'll never be able to do it all yourself. So when I first started out, yes, it was sort of me and Joanna. And so I kind of had a lot of balls and a lot of different, you know, I was doing so many different things. But then as we grew and we, you know, went from like a little email newsletter into Toronto to additional in multiple cities, and we had, you know, Sweet Home and Sweet Mama, and so, like, it was just like every different kind of, you know, version of it. I had to really learn how to create a team, empower them, share what knowledge I had and what I had learned along the way, but really give them the opportunity to try and grow and fail. And that is a huge lesson. I don't think anyone can be an effective leader if they don't know how to give things away to their team. Those were some key lessons I think I learned from Sweet Spot. And also dreaming big. My goal was, okay, I was going to work for free for 6 months and make equity. And so I kind of did the mathematical calculation of, okay, we'd have to sell it for like this much for that time, not to be entirely just like, you know, where I sold myself short, I lost money. And Joanna, when she was first talking for the numbers, like she did have that vision. She had those huge dreams. I've always been a much more pragmatic, like, oh, I don't know. We'll see, you know, I'll try it. But I was sort of like, here's my little mini version of what I sort of thought it would go. I never thought we'd get to like number one lifestyle site in Canada. I never thought Rogers would be buying us. And I never thought at the age of 30, I'd have, I mean, I'm not a gajillionaire, but I had enough of a little nest egg from that sale, way more than I could have earned in those 6 months in advertising, to go off and sort of chase my next dream. So definitely having that, being able to dream big and having that vision is something else I took away from there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes sense. And I can see that in a lot of partnerships, you kind of need to have that balance to work out. You know, you need someone who's going to be critical and think of it in a little bit of the harder way. And you need someone who's going to say, no, we can do this. We got this. The dream, the big dreamer, right? So that they kind of balance each other
out. Yeah.
Coming up next on Power in Heels.
And the kid said, oh no, mommy says her office is the kitchen.
Oh my, what?
Yes.
You had mentioned that you really had to kind of work through accepting the unknown.
Yeah.
And you were really helped with all this by a Mexican psychic that gave you a really good analogy that you said that you would share with us on the episode. So I'm really curious. Please tell us about that.
How do I explain how a Mexican psychic saved me? So I've always known, like literally throughout my entire life, that I wanted to try and write a novel. I love writing. I love storytelling. It's always been a part of my career, but I wanted to give it a go to say, can I create an entire new world into and make a novel? And while I was at Sweet Spot, Joanna, she knew sort of my dreams. And when we sold to Rogers, she really encouraged me to say, you know, this is your chance to go try this out. And I was like, okay, I can take a year and like see how it goes. And sort of that's what was in my mind. But I had spent so much of my last few years where Sweet Spot was my identity, because I did work a lot, but I mean, 3 to 5 nights a week, I was out at some opening. I lived off past hors d'oeuvres and free wine. And it was just sort of who I was and what I was known as. And so suddenly leaving that to go off and kind of try and write a novel was sort of a very scary prospect. Even though I have those sort of pragmatism and fears, I also do silly things like I rented an apartment in Italy and just decided to move there to go write the book. So I left everything. I was living in a town of like 1,000 people on the side of a mountain in Sardinia and working on this book. And then I very randomly get what I think at the initial thing stages was a cold. It turns out it was like strep throat. I end up in a hospital for over a month, like on the brink of death, where I didn't speak. I mean, I spoke Italian pretty well, but like, I didn't know like the word for CAT scan in Italian, because that never really come up in my like family conversation. So I'd be in the hospital bed. I've got all these like IVs hooked up to me on, and then they'd say, we're going to do blah, blah, blah tomorrow. And then I'd say, okay. And then tomorrow I'd be like, oh, that's the word for MRI. Like I had no idea. So it was just a very interesting experience. I'm writing my book on my BlackBerry, because this is how long ago it was, in a hospital bed, but thinking, okay, maybe this is the sign that I should, maybe this like 6 month stint was good and now I should come home. And then I saw Joanna and she said, okay, well, we found a replacement for you as editor. And that was the real, like, I kind of had a panic. And she went, I know you had said a year, but this is what you need to do. I then fled to Mexico and I was in Mexico City with a girl that I actually went to high school with. And we were walking through a park and I was talking to her about how part of me really wanted to follow this dream, but I was kind of in this identity crisis of everything I thought I was had kind of been gone. I said, you know, I see a psychic here who's amazing, but she's always booked up. She goes, well, let me check in. And it turns out we're in the park. The woman was going on vacation for a year. year, but had a cancellation that day at that time. So we literally ran from the park to this woman's house and I sat down. And I'm not a person who generally believes in psychics. What she did tell me though, is that I was currently hanging on to a trapeze and I had one arm on my old life. And she said, you're trying to grab on to your new life without letting go of the old one. So if you imagine a trapeze artist, you know, they swing, they're holding on to life with two arms and they have to like reach for that new bar. If you don't let go of the old bar, you will literally get ripped in half. And this was the analogy that she told me. And I think about it all the time whenever I'm in a point of transition. It's very easy for us to sort of take comfort in what we know. But if you want to try something new and you know, grab for that new life, that new identity, that new whatever, without allowing yourself to sort of say, I'm going to have that, you know, risky point of I'm letting go of my old life, you're just going to sort of tear yourself apart. She said, when you're holding on to that new bar with one hand, that's still going to feel really sort of unsafe and scary and unsure. Said, but if you just trust yourself, you will eventually get that other hand up and swing into your new life. And that is exactly what happened. Because I would still even like get emails from, you know, press people, you know, saying, oh, how about this part? You know, it was very weird. I was still kind of had my toe in that water. And it wasn't until I said, no, I want to focus on being a writer, on writing my book. Until I really embraced that new life, I never really had that sense of comfort and settling that I had. And it took letting go of the old me to really embrace the new me. You never know where your lessons will come from. So that's what my Mexican psychic helped me understand. And it really helped me transition to like the next phase, which was 6-ish years of freelance writing, editing, working on a novel, and like living in just the most random places in the world.
Wow, that is so cool.
That's a crazy story. But I mean, like, that's such an important life lesson. It came from a random psychic in the middle of Mexico City, but it's a really important life lesson. Yeah. And you're completely right. I think a lot of people struggle with that, kind of like letting go of the past and fully committing to the future, because that's scary. That's absolutely terrifying. You're completely right.
So it's a useful thing to go back to, and has been for me.
Just looking back on that journey itself and knowing everything that you know now, and of course you've grown and changed over time as well, is there anything that you would do differently when you look back at that transition, or do you take comfort in your past and learning from it moving forward as well?
Yeah, I mean, I don't look at things in a success and failure. It's sort of, mm-hmm. you know, what did I learn from that? And I fully believe that the person I am today is on account of all the things that I went through in my life. And even spending a month in a hospital in a small town in Italy, that obviously people would go, oh, well, I'm sure you'd erase that, but I wouldn't. It's part of who I am. And so all of these things that you go through, good or bad, make you who you are. I always just try and endeavor to say, okay, let's make this make me a better person. I just try and say, okay, what can I take from this that will help me going forward? And I don't think there is any better teacher than experience. I mean, I could yell advice at people for a day, but no one will learn from that advice until they live it. And I know that because I was the 20-year-old who would have people tell me things and I'd be like, yeah, no. And, you know, now that I'm 42, I know that I'm still young. I still have a lot to learn. But at least now when my 70-year-old mother says, well, here's what I've learned. I'm like, oh, you've got 30 years of me. You do know what you're talking about. As opposed to being like, oh, mom, you know?
Yeah,
so exactly. you just kind of get a different perspective. Even with my own kids, I know that sometimes they just got to go through the bumps and lumps and that will turn them into better people, because only experience really teaches.
For sure. Definitely. I totally agree. Like even in school too, like learning stuff in class, like I just do so much better when it's like hands-on and I'm actually doing it rather than being like told to, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I totally agree.
It makes a huge difference. I felt that. I mean, I did a co-op program and I think I learned more in my few months of co-op stints than I did in the classroom.
For sure.
Because there's so much more to it than what you can fit in a textbook. And that's, I mean, the same with life. So not that those tools aren't helpful. I mean, it can guide you in certain directions. I'm not going to pretend like advice is a bad thing. Advice is great. But I do think that I cherish every bit of experience I've had, good or bad.
So I guess moving forward to Women of Influence, for any of our listeners who may not know too much about it, can you explain a little bit about what Women of Influence is and what you guys do as well?
Yeah. So Women of Influence, I mean, I like to think of us as a community that helps women meet their potential, but our big overarching mission is to help bring more gender equity into the workplace. And we use storytelling as a tool because that through inspiration, through sharing insights, and through just sort of showing not just women what women can do, but showing everyone what women can do, I believe that we can really change the narrative on what women are capable of, what our roles should be. I hate when people say women should be this or women should be that. I believe that everyone should be able to bring their authentic self to work and thrive. And that's our big mission. The nuts and bolts of it is that we have events, we have awards, we have workshops and programs, and we have a whole sort of media side of the business. In addition to being co-CEO, I sort of manage everything that falls under the media arm of the business. I've been there now for almost 7 years. We're the third iteration of leadership. It's been over 27 years now that Women of Influence has been around and has been evolving. It's about the community, and it's about inspiration and insights and sort of women sharing with other women how they got to where they were.
Thank you to our sponsor, Mackenzie Lake Lawyers.
Now, I know you have a little bit of a story when it comes to how exactly you got involved and when you were offered your, you know, position of leadership within the organization as well, if you would like to tell us about that.
Yeah, I was left Sweet Spot and I was freelancing. One of my freelance jobs that I had over a number of years was I managed a magazine. I was the editor of a magazine. Women of Influence had a magazine at the time. And then partway through one issue, their editor left. Joanna happened to be consulting with Women of Influence at the time, and so mentioned to the current CEO, Carolyn Lawrence, and said, well, I know someone who might be able to come in and just sort of help finish it off. I was in Thailand. I flew home. I was fully jet lagged. It was like the wrong time of day. It was like a 12-hour difference. And I was in Carolyn's house explaining why I should do this issue of the magazine with the thought in my brain that I would do one issue, go back on my merry way, continue on my global gallivanting. Like, I had no real intention at that point of doing anything other than 3 months of the magazine. But when I got into the nuts and bolts of it and started interviewing women leaders, editing stories about them, I knew that the wage gap existed, but it was not at that time something that was a mainstream media topic discussion. And since I was either an entrepreneur or generally had women bosses, I had never really been exposed to gender inequity to the degree that I was in this like 3 month stint with the magazine, where I'm like, oh my God, is this really the world? I had no idea. So by the end of that issue, I just sort of said, well, I don't really want to leave. And Carolyn said, well, I don't want you to leave. And I really felt that I had experience to bring from a media perspective that the company was just didn't have at the time. They didn't have that expertise on the team. I, with Sweet Spot, had learned so much about digital media. At the time, Women of Influence had a magazine that they put on the website as a PDF, but didn't really have a digital media focus. We sort of talked about me continuing. Now, at the same time, my relationship with my now husband had been progressing and we decided to go on a pre-honeymoon. So I was working remotely for Women of Influence while driving to Nicaragua. So I spent 5 months as a consultant from random countries in Central America working. And then when I came back full time, I'd been there 1 month. I had not been to an event. Alicia, who's my co-CEO, I think I'd been in 2 meetings with her. And then Carolyn, again, also, I think on the advice of Joanna saying, you know, that Stefania might be able to be a good person for this, pulled us into her office and said, do you want Women of Influence? Like, do you want to take over the company?
Wow.
Yeah. This says something about my personality. Alicia, who had worked there for 2.5 years, but had never really been an entrepreneur, was like, I need to think about it. And I was like, no, yes, let's do this. Like, instantaneous. Absolutely. I just knew what we could bring to this business. But then as the conversation sort of continued and it was coming to the day where we had to sort of say yes or no, we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. The night before, I found out I was pregnant with my daughter. And I had a moment, a very real moment, where I said, I know what it takes to be an entrepreneur. I know that doing this, running this business, will be like having a baby. and I am having an actual, I have a metaphorical baby and a real baby that are going to be like the confluence of the two will be had right around the same time. And so I thought, maybe this is silly. Maybe I shouldn't do it. I should find a steady job. I should be able to go on mat, you know, all of these voices in my head saying, don't do it. And then I thought, this company is literally about gender equity in the workplace. Like, it represents the fact that women shouldn't have to choose between motherhood and their career aspirations. So what kind of story would it be for me to tell my future daughter, oh, I had a dream and a passion and a vision, but then I got pregnant with you, so I gave it all up. So I said, I'm gonna have to do it and I'm gonna figure it out. You know, I'm not gonna say it wasn't so hard. It was so hard, but I have zero regrets about doing it. And like most things in life, you just figure it out. You figure out your support systems, you figure out what works and what doesn't work, and you probably fail a lot, but people need to realize that just because you screw up a few times, things aren't over. Like, everybody screws up a few times. By the time I had my second kid, which was 18 months to the day after I had Amelia, so Miles wasn't quite planned that way, but that's how it happened. Your first kid is like your whole world changes. Your second kid is, oh, good, he's still alive. I'm doing awesome. Like, you know, it's a lot less like the mom guilt and the mom fear. You've kind of gone through it all before. And so, like I said, with him, I took him to meetings. I breastfed in meetings. The timing was great with him. I had him on November 30th. So I kind of took 3 weeks off, sailed into Christmas. And then after New Year's, I was back in the office, you know, with him often, but wow, like full time back to work. It all somehow worked out. So it was interesting to go from within a year's span, a single freelancer living in multiple countries around the world, to married, bought a business, had a baby with another one on the way in a year.
Very impressive. Yeah.
I had already learned my Mexican trapeze lesson. And so it was much easier for me to transition from sort of this life of that's who I was, and that was the period of time, to now this is who I am today. And I've gotten much better at doing those leaps.
For sure. So you actually, so you had your daughter and then yeah. You went on mat leave. And then I think you said you came back around like 3 months later to fill not only your role, but another vacant position as well. I can't even imagine how like hard that would have been.
So the media team has always been, now we're sort of, we've changed things up. At the time it was sort of me and then one person who sort of supported me. And it was, I'm not a sort of, you know, I'm the boss and you're the underling. And so it was like, we're a team. Let's figure out how we're going to get things done. The woman that I had working for me at the time was an absolute superstar. If anything, I would say the lesson I learned there was that I kind of thought that having a baby, I didn't realize it would feel like a Mack truck had hit you. So she took on more than she should have taken on in those 3 months, and was already at the point where she had outgrown that role and should have moved on. And I think held on as long as she could for me. But she just had an opportunity and couldn't miss it. When you are an entrepreneur and it's your business, you have to just figure it out. I had about 3 months of kind of getting my head back on straight and learning what it was like to sleep in 2 hour stints and then wake up to feed a very hungry child, and then came back and she was gone. So I was managing social media, managing partner relationships, managing being a CEO. Having a co-CEO definitely helped in those times, because stepping away entirely without anyone there, you know, that would have made it a lot more challenging. This is a lesson I think I learned even more so in the last year and a half, that you've really got to get good at being kind to yourself. If you don't meet expectations and you beat yourself up for not meeting those expectations, it's like a double blow. That beating yourself up has absolutely no value. There's zero purpose. It does not help you grow as a human being. It does not make you feel good. It does not make you work more. And the sooner you can learn to let go and just say, okay, this issue occurred, how do I move forward? How do I make it not happen in the future? And just focus on that part of it. You will be a happier, healthier, more effective, more productive worker. You just can't let yourself get sucked into, oh my goodness, what have I done? Focus on just the figuring it out. I came back, I had like a month of just like the fire hose, but I had helped the nanny and said, we upped her hours. My husband, he was able to scale back on what he was doing and helped out more with the kids. You know, you move all the pieces in place to make it work. And there was, you know, a few messes to clean up, but obviously I got through to the other side unscathed and learned a lot from it.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. And I mean, you're completely right with all of that. Now, I know that you talked a little bit about when you had to hire a new person. Of course, it took you a while to find that right person to fit that role. Can you talk a little bit about the hiring process and what it means to you to find the right person? Can you talk a little bit about what a good team member would be like?
For me, when I'm interviewing someone, I am radically honest about the kind of person that I am as a boss. Because mm-hmm. there are great employees who just might not be a great fit with the way that I work. And that doesn't mean that they're bad in any way. It just means that they might not like a boss like me, who is, I'm very hands-off. I encourage people to come to me if they have questions, but to, you know, figure things out and try things and manage their own time. I reject the notion that anyone needs to sit at a desk from 9 to 5 and do their work. I always tell my employees, you are an adult who can say, I'm going to go to yoga at 10 a.m., but then I'll finish the work that I want to do at 10 p.m. because that's when I like to get my work done. Some people don't like that structure. Some people want to have a 9 to 5. Some people want to have a lot of face time in an office next to their boss. It's funny because my partner, Alicia, she really likes having in office time and working with her team and connecting in that way. Even when I could, like pre-pandemic, when we could have easily gone in, I was going in maybe once or twice a week, you know? And I like that. To me, the hybrid model is perfection. You know, you have 1 or 2 days where you sit and you get stuff done and you collaborate and you brainstorm or do whatever you need to do. And then you go off, you just get the work done that needs to get done and you connect. I first and foremost look for someone who likes working the way that I work, because that will produce the best result. There's so much more that goes into whether a person will be a successful employee than like the things on their resume. Mm-hmm. So I look a lot at, you know, do they have passion in this? And can I teach them what they would need to know? Do they have sort of the raw talent that they would need to be successful? I look for someone who's got natural writing talent. And then I also, when they come on board, I just sort of say, what are you good at? What are you interested in? What do you want to do? And then I do the other bit. We just shift the plates around so that the job really fits who they are and sort of help them grow from there. And I always joke with people, I mean, Women of Influence is a great incubator of talent, because we tend to, you know, hire, you know, younger women, start of the career. Every single person I've had has been such a superstar, and I feel, you know, lucky to have it. But like, I see it as sort of, you're here for a period of time to work with me and learn, and then you're going to go off and, you know, see what's the next chapter.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. I've started to see more of a pattern of that happening with various companies where employees, they're given the freedom to really work where they're passionate. They actually work harder and they work better. And this is proven. It's been like researched and proven. Yeah. So I definitely can see that there. And of course, it's just proof from everything you're saying. So that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Hey, it's Macy here. I hope you're enjoying this episode so far. Make sure to subscribe to join the conversation and never miss out on another piece of practical career advice.
Now, earlier we were talking about when you had your children, you came back to work quite fast and you brought them in with you. Like they basically came to work with you every day. Can you talk about that? So, you know, kind of blending motherhood into work and just, you know, making that the new norm.
Talking about sort of the working mom life is always been interesting, because even this over the last, like since I started Women of Influence, even that narrative has changed a little bit, where we used mm-hmm. to talk to women about like, how can you have it all? I mean, motherhood is a very personal journey. And I do believe that everyone has to find their own balance of how they do it. I mean, I don't think we should be telling women, well, you should only do your career and you should have a 6-week mat leave. Like, we did go to a place a while ago, we were celebrating the fact that women would be off enough for their body to recover and then, you know, hire nannies and then go do it. I think everybody needs to make their own decisions about what's right for them. My own mother took off 7 years with me and my sister, and now has spent the last 30 years running her own school. And that was her way of doing it. I mean, my way of doing it worked for me. And I think that was sort of the key, was that I figured out what would work for me as a mother. It's so funny. Literally last night, I was in bed with my daughter having a little like nighttime chat before sleep. And she was asking me all of these very random questions about medical stuff, like vaccines and viruses. She's 5 going on 40. And I said to her, you know, you're really interested in this medical stuff. I said, maybe, do you think maybe you'd want to be a doctor one day? And she said, no, I want to be a mama. Aww. And like the alarm, like the you know, if I could have jumped out of the bed, I just went, you know, you can be a doctor and a mama. And it was like this light bulb went off in her head of, really? Like, it's not. And I said, you know, you can have the choice. I mean, if you want to just be a mama, you can, but you could also do both. It's funny because even in my own childhood, like, I sometimes go home and I see books that were read to me as a child. My parents have kept a lot of things, and they'll have like, daddy goes to work, mommy's home doing the laundry. And like, that's in like the children's book that would be, cause that was sort of the narrative. Literally a half hour before this call, my kids were watching a show. And after this, I will go rage post on LinkedIn about it. But in the show, it was a boy talking to a fictional characters. And like, he said, oh, does your mommy mind that your daddy has an office at your house and she doesn't? And the kid said, oh no, mommy says her office is the kitchen.
Oh my, what?
Yes. What? Yeah. And I'm sitting there typing emails on my computer and my son is watching this show. And I heard that line and I could have blown a gasket. Like, I was ready to start. Shocking. I'm literally looking to see who the creator of the show is. When did it come out? How do I stop this? That is a message that you would think would have died long ago.
Yeah.
But kids still hear it, and we don't realize how much they internalize. I mean, we definitely have a long way to go about messaging regarding motherhood and care and fatherhood and care, mm-hmm. and caregiving in general. We as a society have devalued the importance of care. I'm hopeful that we have learned over the last sort of 18 months, especially in that period when all of a sudden all the kids were home from school and everyone was figuring out how to manage that. And women were leaving their jobs in droves and still have not gone back at the same rate that men have. I hope we've got a glimpse at how sort of fragile this whole system of care is in society, certainly in Western society. Motherhood should be about choice. Parenting should be about choice. We as a society need to recognize that if we are not investing in caregiving, that's how we keep sort of screwing up the next generations that come after us. So it's a really important topic to me. And I yell about it a lot on the news when I have the opportunity to, the importance of caregiving, but it's all about that personal journey. And you know what, I can hear the little ones outside the door. we might get a visit by the end of this.
I would love that.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. Just to quickly wrap up our interview here with you, I guess it's only fitting that we ask what your dreams or aspirations and hopes for even are for the future of Women of Influence.
I mean, I already say we're a community of women sort of helping each other to be their best selves, to meet their potential. We're already in the process of working on how do we really dive into that community aspect. So we're working with our programmers on making it possible for other organizations to advertise their events on our website. We're all playing in the same sandbox and we're all trying to get to the same goal. And so, you know, we're working on how do we make it possible for people to more easily submit their stories? How do we like make that process more efficient so that I can share way more stories than we're doing now? Because that storytelling aspect we've got figured out and codified in a sense. And so now our next step is really, how do we, you know, make this magic, bring it all together and just really amplify the community aspect of what we do?
I mean, I'm super excited to see where you guys go and what you do, because you're already doing so many great things. And it's really awesome to see you feature so many amazing women. But it was fantastic for us to be able to turn it around and feature you for once. I think you're really incredible.
Thank you.
And it was an absolute pleasure to feature you on our show. So thank you for allowing us that opportunity. And I guess before we just wrap everything up and put an end to this, as much as I would just love to talk to you forever, I think we should turn the mic over to you. And just if there's anything or any last words that you want to leave our listeners with, the time is yours.
Oh my goodness. The last gem of wisdom. Okay. It's my success in life has come from jumping off the cliff and growing wings on the way down. And that ability comes from just a belief in, you don't have to know, you don't have to have anything figured out. All you need is a belief that you can learn. I certainly, in every single stage of my career and every one of those pivots that we talked about have not known how to do literally any of those things. But I just said, okay, you might not know what you're doing, but you are capable of figuring it out. And we are fed as younger people that life is something where you have to sort of like go to school, you get the tools, and then that, and you figure out your path and you go down it. Most people really have no idea what they're doing. Like, most people are just figuring it out as they go along.
Thank you so much for joining us in the show today. It was an absolute pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
That's all for today's episode. Thank you for being a part of our audience and network. Don't forget to hit subscribe. And of course, if you have any ideas for our show, you can chat directly with us on our website.
This is Power.